Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going.
What's going on, all you Brooklyn Buddhists? This is Woody Massey, producer of the Jimmy Della Valley Brooklyn Buddha Podcast, co-hosted by Tim Homamune. Today on the podcast, we have Robert Cotrini, actor extraordinaire. This guy, you go to his IMDb page, he has 80 credits. This guy has acted in everything. You've seen him on True Blood. You've seen him in movies. Just scroll down his page. Fascinating. Part of cinematic and broadcast history. Jimmy had him on the show, and things were really deep, man. Robert, he shared his story, and at one point, he was even close to tears. It was a beautiful interview, man. It was an honor to sit there and hear what this guy has been through throughout his career and what he's taken from it. And, Jimmy, he's out right now doing some dates, some carnival cruises. So look him up on his website, jimmydallyvalley.com. And that's going to be it, guys. Enjoy the interview, and we'll see you next week. Forget about it.
Brooklyn Buddha. So, as I always say on the Brooklyn Buddha podcast, I like to bring people on that I've spoke with, I've actually talked with, I've followed, I know who they are as actors or... It's rare in referrals, but this guy is just a great, great character actor. You know, I mean, he's a guy who has paid his dues. He's from Brooklyn, New York, so I love that as well.
Fits the name.
Yeah, Brooklyn Buddha. And he's a great guy. Tim, you've seen him. He's been, you know, yep. True Blood. I don't have his IMDb up. He'll tell us if he wants to, you know, because what I do, you know, I always like to know what's the best thing he's did, what that he feels. Sometimes it's not even a big budget. It could be a short film that he loves and he won awards or he thinks he should have won awards and it might have been snubbed, you know? You never know. You never know what these guys are going to say, and that's why I bring him on, because I want it, you know? So anyways, Woody, my producer, say hi.
Hello, hello.
And Tim, of course, is who I've been talking to.
Hello.
And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the great actor, Robert Cotrini.
Thank you, guys. I don't know if I'd say great, but I do appreciate that.
Very good.
I got to tell you, Jimmy, I don't even know why the hell I'm here. I'm used to memorizing lines.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking like live. I went over this with my wife before I got here, and she's like, what are you going to say? I said, I have no idea.
Don't worry.
They're going to be asking me like questions or they're talking, and I'm like, I'd really rather say, give me something so I can memorize and come in and do my magic act.
But, do you have a trick to memorizing lines?
I tell you. It was my actually. It was. I've been doing it now. 2015. 20 years.
20 years.
It was my biggest fear.
Oh yeah.
Back then, when I was still training, I was asking everybody that I knew that was booking like a local commercial. You know, how do you memorize? What do you? I just started, literally, to tell myself over and over. I memorize rapidly. I memorize fast. I was just talking to Peg, my wife, about this the other day in a car. She said, where's your little, I had a little three-ring index card thing from Office Depot, and I wrote affirmations on it.
Right.
And I'd drive around the car all day, just talking to myself. And I know people looking at me, like, what the hell is this guy? He's talking to himself. And one day, one night I'm in class, and would go through an hour's worth of exercises and whatnot, and then my drama coach would give out some scenes, and it's a cold read. You know, I didn't know it was a cold read at the time, but that's what it is. Now I know. You get 15, 20 minutes to work it over, and you come in and work class, and then you start to do the scenes. And I was just nailing it every single time. And my drama coach, Jill DePianelli, who is still my mentor, she said, so why is Bobby getting all this? And it actually sounds like the first time he's spoken the words. And I feel like we're falling short in some other areas. And one of the other students, Barbara Sloan, actually, I remember correctly, raised her hand and says, because he's off book. And I wasn't even aware of it.
Right.
And when she said that, it was the first time that I became aware of it. And I thought, wow, you know, she's right. I am off book. And it was from that night on that I realized this is one of my strongest points. So when I do a workshop these days, it was actually on a website, not a website, a Facebook page recently. Somebody said, Robert Catrini, Johnny Bulbs wrote, Robert Catrini may or may not have sold his soul to the devil for his memorization techniques because we have no idea how he does it. But no, I, 15, 20 minutes, and that's all I need. I'm back and I've got the sides and I'm down and I just put them, I don't need them.
Wow. You know, Tim's horrible. He's a great actor. This is Tim. Okay. He's a great actor. We just created shot a sitcom pilot. We got a lot of heat from it. And Tim did a great job in it. But this, you know, we're rehearsing the night before, and he's like, oh, I go, you'll be fine. You'll be fucking fine. And then when we rolled the cameras, he was fine.
Yeah.
But he was so worried before it. It was
the funny story is we're doing a different pilot, and he kept saying, you better remember your lines. So I do it. I get my lines perfect. He screws up his lines.
Oh, yeah. You know TJ Castronovo?
Yeah.
He was the producer on this pilot. So we did this pilot. And it still worked out. It was fine. But it was. Because I was so worried about you. Because Tim is a great actor. And it drives me crazy because we were in acting class together. He's my best friend. He just moved out here. We were in acting class together in New York, and we went through all these different classes and improv and all this stuff. And it's like I had to continue working, and he's not going to classes anymore. I didn't do drama. You got started in a later area. Like, I didn't start until 99.
Yeah, I started in 94.
So you were already a gentleman with a job. You had a day job.
Yeah,
you
my wife and I, we owned a delicatessen.
Okay.
Yeah, we owned
here?
Back in the East Coast, in South Florida. Okay, we moved from New York to Palm Beach County down in South Florida, opened up a business, had a lot of experience in catering, but acting was something I, in all honesty, I had always wanted to do, but I never said anything to anybody, like not another human being, not even my wife. She didn't even know.
Yeah.
And it was late 93, if I remember correctly. We moved to Florida in 87, and it was late 93, where we took the night off, went to a movie. It was a Steven Seagal movie, Out for Justice.
Oh, yeah. With Forsythe.
Forsythe. So,
who I think is a great actor.
Oh, no. Matter of fact, I was born in Ward 7 in Brooklyn. I think he was, I'm going to say 14. I could be wrong about that, but not very far from where I was born.
Right.
So we're sitting watching a movie. I'm not going to use the names, but of course I didn't know what any of this stuff. I didn't know front cards. I didn't know any of these phrases at the time. All I know is a card comes up with Gina Gershon's name on it.
Right.
If I remember correctly, it's a double card.
Right.
And there's another name on there, and I sat bolt upright in the theater, and I blurted out the name, and of course, you know, everybody's looking at me. Even my wife looked at me like, "What the hell are you doing?" And suddenly, from being half asleep, I'm now alert because I know this name. It's a stand-up comic that I had met. I didn't know he was an actor. And I'm watching. We get outside. And Peg says, "The hell was that?" And I just came out with it. I said, "What would you think if I changed careers and wanted to become an actor?" And she didn't even bat an eyelash. Mm. She just said, "I think it'd be great. What do you have to do?"
All right.
It was this girl working for us, Teresa. Teresa wasn't a hippie. She was a beatnik. She was like Dobie Gillis.
Sure.
You know, pre-hippie. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, if anybody knows anybody in this business, that these creative people, I bet you it's Teresa.
Right.
And we go into work the next day, Teresa Yadiana, and say, drama coach, "Oh, yeah, I think I can help you." A couple of days go by, Teresa, "I'm working on it, boss, I'm working on it." A week later, She comes back and says, I got somebody. Mm. Her name is Jill DePianelli. She's East Coast, you know, New York type Italian. And she runs a school called the University Center for the Performing Arts, UCPA, down in Davie, with a little neighborhood outside of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, I performed there.
So I give a call. I go down and order the class. I walk in. It's me and five other women. Never been in an acting class. I don't know what to expect. And this little tiny bohemian right out of Greenwich Village, mm-hmm. you know, beret, you know, it's a little fire hydrant walks in and says, hi, I'm Gigi. And I said, I am Bob, you know. Said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm just in order to class, yada, yada, yada. And we sit down and she says, okay, everybody up on stage. And the girls go up and she says, Robert, go up. I said, oh, no, I'm just here to look. She said, not in my room, you're not. Yeah. I go, oh, Christ. I get up there, we go through this whole thing. We sit down, and she starts to do this training exercise called coffin monologues. Explains exactly what it is. And, of course, at some point she puts me up there and can't see anything. I mean, spotlights in my eyes, I can't see the audience. It was in the theater. Mm-hmm. And when it was over, she came over to me and said, you know, what do you do? I said, well, I own a delicatessen in Boynton Beach. She says, if you give this up, you're a fool. Oh. That meant a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I started studying twice a week, 2 years. Got the lead in the very first audition I ever went out for, play. 14 plays after that.
And this was all in Florida?
Yeah. She said, plus I was doing, she said, you gotta start doing commercials. And people started writing checks for commercials. And then she said, you gotta get into SAG. Mm-hmm. You gotta start doing some TV work. And there was limited amount that I could do, but I started traveling the Miami to North Carolina corridor, mm-hmm. The Finn Cannons in North Carolina.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Craig, Lisa, they've been very good to me.
Are you doing on camera, or not on camera, on tape, putting stuff on tape for them now?
They're still asking.
Yeah.
I'm still, yeah, they're always asking.
They're great.
They're really, I mean, they're between Miami and, you know, in Miami you got Ellen Jacoby and Lori Wyman. Mm-hmm. Baltimore you got Pat Moran, but other than that, between Miami and New York, the Finn Cannons are the powerhouse. I mean, at some point you got to deal with them.
So how do you think it's changed from back then? Where, because I believe that it's now, you know, I love being in L.A. I'm in New York my whole life, but I love being in L.A. I love the weather, of course, you know, the cold. I hate the cold and all that crap. But it's like, you know, putting our stuff on tape. So this, I always believe that in the back of my mind, there's some actor in Kentucky that can do a New York accent that's going to put in for something on tape. You know what I mean? He lives in fucking Kentucky, and sometimes they'll book it over us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've had that happen a couple of times.
Yeah. And it's weird. You're like, well, this guy's not even here.
Although, you know, for instance, I think it was Prisoners.
Right.
Probably shouldn't even say them. They were already shooting in Atlanta. Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman.
Great movie.
Yeah, that was. And the role of Father Dunn, the pedophile priest. Mm-hmm. So I go in and I read for, it was Rich D'Elia, who was still with Barden Schnee at the time. And, I mean, I nailed it. I know I nailed it. I walked in, I was an emotional mess, yada, yada, mm-hmm. yada. And he was like, yes, that's it. Oh, my God, it was phenomenal. So I get the call. Next day, they said, so what they're going to do is they're going to hold some, this is what the agent told me, they're going to hold some auditions in Atlanta, see if they can find anybody to do on camera what Bobby just did yesterday. I get it, you know, won't have to fly me, yada, yada, yada. Movie comes out. It's Len Cario. Guess he had a couple of weeks off from Blue Bloods. And Wednesday, so I get it. The producers did what the producers tend to do. You know, we got a name, Wednesday, everybody knows him. I'm sure it was an offer at that point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it happens. Happened to me again two years ago. I'm in New Orleans shooting. New Orleans has been very good to me, really very good. I'm shooting Star-Crossed. My agent calls and says, run over and see Ryan Glorioso. You got to put you on tape for something. This will put you on the map. Mm-hmm. The kidnapping of Freddie Heineken. 1983, Freddie Heineken was kidnapped with his chauffeur. The chauffeur's name, I don't know if it was short for Abner, but his chauffeur's name was Ab Dodderer. They're kidnapped. To this day, it's the largest ransom ever paid, right, for a human being, for a kidnapped victim. I go over and I read from Ryan, who knew my work anyway, and I had rapped on Starcross, and he says, and he's standing there behind the camera, and he's like, where are you going to be next Thursday? And I said, well, this is a Thursday now. I said, I'm flying back to L.A. tomorrow. He said, what's going on? He says, you really need to be here next Thursday. He said, Judy Cairo, producer, is going to be here. Now, Judy had, 2 years before, produced Crazy Heart. So yeah. Jeff Bridges won the Academy Award. Yeah.
Well, she wants you. She's got, they want you in the room.
She's
they,
got
they
Judy.
They got to see you.
Exactly. He says, you need to be here. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the role of Ab Dodderer, mm-hmm. you know? And it's a full Cockney accent, you know? And I come back home next day. I talk to Peg, and I said, yeah, I got to go. So I fly down the following Wednesday. I get there. I walk into the room, and I'm, you know, I'm, what can I tell you? I'm a method actor from New York, you know. I was up against some local competition, which apparently didn't cut it.
Mm-hmm.
Very telling, by the way. So, you know what, before you, just to interrupt that story, you're a chauffeur. It's 1983. It could be today.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think you might be wearing at the audition? Forget the hat. But what do you think you might be wearing? You're a chauffeur for a billionaire. What's the very least? The
black suit. Black suit.
You would think.
Suit and tie.
White shirt.
You would think. Maybe a black tie.
Right.
At the very least. I'm waiting outside, and there are actors going in, and I'm actually questioning myself, and I'm sitting in the car, and I'm looking at these guys going up the stairs. I'm parked right outside.
Mm-hmm.
One of these guys got like jeans, sneakers. Mm-hmm. Another guy's got shorts on, white shirt, tails hanging outside.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, well, there's got to be another audition going, because they can't right. be here reading for the same part I'm reading mm-hmm. for, because no idiot would walk in. You know? So Ryan comes out, weighs me in. He said, 5 minutes. I said, okay. Well, when I walked in, I looked like I had been held captive for 5 days, and I know that they're coming in to kill me, because mm-hmm. they're not going to cut off Freddie's hand. They're going to cut off my head and send it back just to show that they're serious.
Mm-hmm.
I finished the audition, and she's sitting there looking at the resume, and Ryan is really happy behind the camera. He's looking at me, and he's looking over at her, and he's like, so for the next couple of weeks, she's beside herself. So I think, well, okay, I did my job. Which is all you can do in an audition. You know, mm-hmm. you walk in, you book the room. So for the next 2 weeks at least, I'm the number one set. They're already filming in Europe, in Belgium. Director got the tape. Everybody loved it. This is the feedback I'm getting. And I'm checking IMDb every day, and they're filling roles right and left. But mm-hmm. nobody's booking Ab Dodderer. And I'm like, come on. This is 21 days working right next to Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
The director, if I remember correctly, had directed one of the Swedish Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the trilogy. And they hired one of the actors that had worked for on that was mm-hmm. already there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay, I get it. But, again, the bottom line is, I did my job.
Yeah, you won the casting director. You won the producer. They know. You know, this is the problem that, I love that story, but this is the problem that doesn't happen as much anymore that used to. You win that casting director, you win that producer, the executive producer, they saw you, right? So, you know, you would go to Bochco. Bochco's like, oh, hey, you know, he's not right for this, but you know what? I got something he's right for.
Exactly.
And
that's exactly right.
The way it used to work. Now, the packaging has really killed us.
Yeah.
It's really killed us.
Not to mention the packaging, plus how many film people are coming down to TV the past
Jesus
five, six,
Christ.
7 years.
I mean,
you got to be kidding.
You know, I mean, I went on one series regular last year, and it's like, you know, I mean, and then it's like this great script. It's me, Dominic Lombardozzi, and we're going to shoot this fucking pilot. And then all of a sudden, it's not going to go. It's like, I'm like, fucking, you know, it's with Henry Winkler. It's like, what the fuck? Like, how is this show not going to go?
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
What are you, crazy? Yeah. So it's like, I learned a lot about this city, like Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
You know, you think he's going to do a TV show. So, well, it's guaranteed it's going to get picked up. There's no guarantee no more. It's
yeah.
just, like, so let's say some of the biggest producers out here would be like David E. Kelly and Bill D'Elia.
Yeah.
These are the two guys, I think, that are really running Hollywood right now.
Like, really, Bill, yeah.
You know,
so yeah, Bill directed me and Ally McBeal. He directed my episode, hired me.
Right,
yeah,
so you got, now he does like a How to Get Away with Murder.
Yeah.
And then he's got, you know, he's got all these shows. Yeah. And you're like, have you gone up for judges? Like, you should be sliding into that judge role.
Once or twice.
Just a nice steady.
Yeah, once or twice. I was actually in New Orleans 4 weeks ago, and I was asked to put myself on tape for a judge for
right.
something that was shooting in Atlanta. The judge and one of the lawyers as well
right.
For a film. Haven't heard anything on that yet, but I actually just booked something that I and forgive me, I just can't tell you what it is.
That's okay.
But I booked something huge.
Okay. Well, that's good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a major studio film. I was asked to fly down to New Orleans and talk to the director. I did. And I got the call 3 days later. I got it. And this
sweet.
This could put me on the map. It's a $100 million film.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There you go.
Every scene with the guy. With
yeah.
the man, and I'm
so
like,
you're supporting. Or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I got a couple of days. I'll be down there for a couple of days in October, a couple of days in November, a couple of days
right.
in January. But yeah, I can't. I mean, I literally can't say anything, and I'm certainly not going to put anything on Facebook. My agent and my Southern agent, we have a saying. I don't necessarily agree with people who put every single thing on
right.
Facebook.
Right.
I think you're hurting yourself.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
There's no mystique.
Well, it's not only that, but you can tick off a lot of people.
And
you
too.
Really can.
You know, there's such jealousy. I'm always happy for everybody, but there's a lot of people that are just so jealous.
But it's not only the jealousy from your peers.
Yeah.
The last thing in the world I want to do is tick off a casting director.
Right.
Who say, you shouldn't have put that on there. What are you doing? So... my Southern agent. I may Yelp. I'm at the Cafe Du Monde.
Right.
You know? What the hell? And then certainly friends will weigh in and say, "Oh, wait a minute. What are you doing in New Orleans? Are you working?" And my standard answer is has become, "I wish I could tell you, but I don't know nothing about nothing. And that other thing that I do know something about." I don't know nothing about that either.
That's great.
And that's exactly the phrase I use. I said, guys, I can't tell you. I wish I could, but I don't put anything up about auditions.
Right.
I just don't say anything to anybody because I don't want to tick somebody off that I don't even know I ticked them
right.
off.
See,
it's
I'm
like Katrina.
I want to tell people and nobody cares.
And don't
you know, as we were talking earlier about these crazy, you know, I post every once in a while. I mean, I'm a comedian. It's different. You're an
actor. Oh, yeah.
I'm a comedian, so I'll post about how I feel about things.
Yeah.
Like, I get, you know, really annoyed with these people that don't make a living as an actor, and then they're posting, you know, something, like, they'll comment. You know, like, so I do this movie, and then the director's like, hey, post the thing, the movies, you know. So
yeah.
It's me, Vinnie Jones, you know, and Jamie Kennedy. Did you work with Jamie Kennedy?
A couple of times, yeah.
I think I remember you in...
the Jamie Kennedy experiment.
And yeah. You played the mob father.
That's exactly.
You were so fucking good. You guys remember him?
Yeah.
And he comes in, and it was the black kid, right? Who
we
was banging your daughter?
That's exactly right. It was Bow Wow.
Yeah,
Bow Wow was
Bow Wow and Omarion.
Omarion, that's
yeah.
exactly right. That's exactly
were,
right.
I was so scared of you. You
thank,
was like,
thank
you.
That's
screaming.
Funny story. We're on set. Nobody knows who I am. It was the second time they had hired me, and I didn't even know why I was there.
Yeah.
So, oh no, that was that was that Punked? Because I did
punked?
Both.
It was
I did,
one of them.
I did Kennedy and Jerry, the Experiment and Punked. So I'm standing by the, on the side, and we're looking down at the Renaissance Hotel. We're up in the hills, mm-hmm. and it's a gated house by the pool. So I'm standing in mind of my own business, and Omarion comes in, and he's got his entourage. And the director, I think it was David Fransky, he turns around and he says, so to Omarion, he says, so I'll show you what we're going to do. And he turns around, he looks at me, he says, hey, Bobby, you know, gives me like the wink, do it. I'm looking at him, and I said, being like, do it? He says, and he, you know, like the wide eye, you know, do it. I walk up and I'm in his face and I'm screaming. And what was interesting was the bodyguards backed up.
Yeah. You were fucking so scary.
And then I stopped and I said, I looked like, at him and I just shut it off. Ooh. And I said, you mean like that? And he was like, oh, holy shit. God, you scared the shit out of me. I don't know.
Oh, like, Omarion?
Yeah. And I said, your bodyguards were going in the wrong direction. Shouldn't they have closed it? So we got everything set up in the garage. Yeah. And all I'm hearing in my earpiece is white noise.
Right.
And I'm like, guys, I can't hear you. I'm hearing this white noise.
Right.
It's okay, you'll be okay. I'm not, because they would give you direction.
Right.
All the girls by the pool, they've all got them, they're hearing. And I'm like, guys, suddenly I hear, Bobby, go. And I'm like, shit. I step outside. It was all ad lib.
Yeah, so I could tell it was. I didn't think it was scripted.
All I'm hearing is, but the annoying part is I'm hearing an earful of loud white noise while I'm trying to remember what I'm supposed to be doing. And finally they cut it off, and they come out and they're all happy and everything. And he said, you really couldn't hear us. I said, no, I told you that before I stepped out here. Because they're going, so Bobby, if you can hear us, like, kick the lawn chair into the pool. I didn't do it. I'm like, but then David came over to me and he said, the funniest line was when you said, there's only one, I forget what it was, there was only one chairman of the board, Frank.
Yeah,
it was something to do with Frank Sinatra. And I said, you know what? My head was so full listening to the white noise, trying to forget that, and listening to the dialogue coming through. I said, I honestly don't know what the hell I did in the last 90 seconds. I really don't. But it turned out to be pretty funny.
Oh, man, it was funny. That was great. So who do you think, who's, I'm sure there's a lot of them, but who's one of your all-time favorite directors that you've worked with that you've learned from, that you really learned from, like you're like, wow, I never saw this before?
Well, I tell you what happened. I, way back in Miami, you know, I guess everybody does some extra work just to learn the protocols on the set and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But extras, especially outside of L.A. and New York, it's been my experience, this is my personal experience, that the background, half of them don't even really give a shit that they're there. I mean, you know, when they're offset, they're goofing off. I found it different with the background here in, you know, Hollywood, in Entertainment Central. So in Miami, I was on a fast track to learning. I needed to know what the protocol was in a set. Mm-hmm. So the original Bad Boys, Michael Bay, mm-hmm. I was a stand-in for Mark McCauley one day, who's Laurie Wyman's husband. Mm-hmm. I was a stand-in one day for Joey Pants, Ben Leon. And the rest...
He hasn't been working. Is he okay?
I don't think Joey's been working. I don't know. I don't know. Is it really? Sick. Did you read his book?
Yeah, I think I have it right on.
Yeah, terrific book. Yeah, Who's Sorry Now? Good book. They did something with me that they didn't do with anybody else in that set. They're finished with the background. You go, okay, background, back to holding, whatever. I never moved. I stood right behind Bay's chair, and I kept my mouth shut. Maybe it was because I was a little older than everybody else.
Yeah,
the
respect.
But I was obviously not acting the way the rest of them were. Mm-hmm. And in between every take, I just stood behind Bay's chair in Video Village, watched the monitor, listened to all the conversation, and nobody ever asked me to go back to holding. Mm-hmm. And that told me a lot subconsciously about the way I was personally acting on the set, you know, my personal demeanor, because I with every passing minute, I'm thinking, they know I'm serious. I'm not here to fool around. I'm here to learn, and I'm not talking to anybody else. I'm just minding my own business. I'm not creating. I'm not uttering a sound. I'm just watching what they're saying and how he's setting this shot up and why he didn't like that, because that pole is growing out of his head. Let's move him over. And it was an education. It was an education. But I've worked with, you know, Bill D'Elia.
That was on Bad Boys?
No.
Oh, that was a different. The one where you were behind.
The first. What was it? What movie?
Michael Bay one.
Michael Bay, Bad Boys.
Yeah. Because I was going to say.
Yeah, that was the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how some of these.
Martin Lawrence, right? Martin Lawrence.
And Will Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like some of these. I've seen some of the sets where they have the blue screen, you know, the green screen, and I'm like, how does this, it's hard. I don't know. I'm trying to like sneak behind to see how they.
Yeah.
And I guess. I know they said James Cameron has upped it where he can actually, see how the Avatar, when he was filming that.
Oh, well, Cameron broke a lot of new ground.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, technically, he was.
Yeah, because I've seen some, I'm like, what is the director's, the actor's walking.
You got to have that vision.
Yeah,
you got to have that vision in your head.
Yeah.
It's, so yeah, but I've just worked with, I'm really proud of the list of directors and people, some friends have said, so, you know, on your resume, you know, 50 guest star roles on network, you know, what are you proud of? I say, the thing I'm really proud of, the names in the last column.
Yeah, that's how I have it, like on my resume. I have my, I have my directors, and sometimes, you know, like you'll meet with different representation, and they'll go, well, who was the thing, you know, like, they might say, oh, well, you know, they don't know you there or something. I said, well, look, I did a guest star with this this director.
Yeah.
Fred Savage directs everything. I've got him right here on my resume. You know what I mean? The guy, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Every TV show. Now he's got the hit. I think this show's going to be a hit, this show, him and Rob Lowe.
The Grinders.
Just came out yesterday. I heard it was great. You know PJ Marino?
Yeah,
yeah, PJ. So PJ.
Yeah, I work with PJ.
Yeah,
and,
PJ, a good friend of mine. You know, Bruno Amato is a good friend of mine.
Dominic
Bass.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
These are all my boys. We're all Italian Goombas. We're all tight. We all cheer for each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the thing.
Yeah, PJ's a good guy.
Yeah. Who do you hang out with? I mean, of course, your wife, your best friend. You know, my wife's my best friend.
Yeah, Peggy's.
But what about any actors, any guys? You ever get together with them?
Well, it's interesting. Right now, we're up in Santa Clarita,
yeah,
and we're going to be moving back down this area.
Yeah.
We're too far away.
I'd love to invite you to a lunch that I go to. It's me, Carmine Caridi. No, Carmine.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
He's Carmine's a huge fan of mine, so he invited me to lunch.
Oh, I love that.
So it's me. Tim is now there. It's Jerry Houck, who's a great character actor.
Yeah, yeah.
John Capodice.
Oh, Capodice, yeah, sure.
Ralph Morrow.
Okay.
You remember he? Bobby Costanzo.
Costanza,
yeah. One of my really close, you know. So we all eat every Monday. I'd love to invite you.
Absolutely. Costanza, as a matter of fact, I've done only one play here in L.A., Golden Boy. Costanza was going to play the role of Tom Moody, and I guess after 2 weeks dropped out, and I was the second choice, and they called me, and the only reason I did it was because it's Golden Boy, you know,
yeah, sure.
Odessa. I'm like, oh, this is, and we did it at the Zephyr Theater on Melrose, and
he's been directing plays. His buddy owns some theater in Chicago, because he wanted me to go to Chicago, and he's like, would you go to Chicago and do a play? I go, it's too much, you know.
I don't want to go to
Chicago and do a fucking play and not make a ton. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it.
But regardless, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a great guy. He wants to do my podcast. I haven't. I don't know. I sometimes because he almost does a podcast with us every time we eat lunch. I love Bobby. He's came to see me perform and Tim, because Tim. So that's how Tim got in there. But so I did a movie with Carmine, and I have a lead role, but Carmine's only in the one scene with me.
Right,
and he goes, you're so present, you're so good. So that's how I got invited, because I was at the Celebrity Poker Tournament with Jason Alexander.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm at the tournament, and this guy goes, oh hey, Jimmy's going to to lunch with us Monday. He goes, you can't just invite, Carmine has to approve that, da, da, da. And he goes, Carmine invited him. He goes, oh, okay. And then me and Bobby came real tight.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was like, I mean, because it's like the Godfather, right, Tim? I mean, he's, Carmine fucking sits here.
Yeah.
And you know Carmine's story, right?
I don't know. No, I really don't.
Well, you're going to enjoy this. I don't think I've ever told it on the podcast. So, Robert Evans is the producer of The Godfather.
Yeah.
Coppola. Carmine is the choice for Sonny Corleone. He fucking goes through wardrobe fitting, every single outfit. I think he gets a cash advance, or, you know, whatever. Not cash advance, whatever it is, that he gets a check and all this. He's Sonny Corleone. And all of a sudden, Robert Evans goes, nah. He goes, you want Pacino or you want fucking Carmine? He goes, we're not doing Mutt and Jeff. He goes, I want Jimmy Conn.
Really?
And that's how it happened.
No shit.
Carmine
he was
can,
on the list. What was on?
Oh, yeah. We've got the, I've got the list. Like, you know, the breakdown.
Right.
It's on Google. You can Google it. It's Wikipedia. It's knowledge that's up there.
Really?
I mean, so he's the only guy in Godfather. He's not in Godfather because of that whole situation. He's in Godfather 2 and 3, two different characters.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because in Godfather 2, he is, but Danny Aiello, remember, they whacked the guy in the bar.
I got to remember back, Jesus. Yeah.
But then, you know, and then he got not nominated, but a major write-up with in The Prince and the City.
Oh, okay.
Because he was, like, with Sidney Lumet.
Lumet, yeah.
Yeah. So he had Carmine, and then, you know, he was on NYPD Blue and everything. But, man, this guy, you know, he's 80-something years old. And good guys, Shelley Desai. You know Shelley?
Don't know that I do.
Major, major character actor. Okay. Works all the time. He's Indian. India to Chicago.
Okay.
And that's where he fell in love with the and then came out here. He's in like every Kevin James and Sandler movie.
Okay.
And,
okay.
And he was in my pilot as well. And we eat lunch together. We go to plays. Do you and your wife go to Geffen or anything?
Yeah, every now and then. We own we had a lot of residual money laying around a couple years ago. So we opened up a frozen yogurt store up in Valencia.
Okay.
Yeah, we're right next to the IMAX theater, the only IMAX theater in the whole valley, Westfield Mall. But it's up for sale because we, I'm serving two masters.
Yeah.
And I can't.
Right.
I just can't. Before we opened up the business, I guess the only phrase I can think of, I was paying a lot more attention, or I had more time to pay attention to the career.
Right.
And I was doing better. Then suddenly I'm doing marketing, I'm doing everything just to keep the store open and pay God knows how many thousands of dollars a month rent, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And we realized we can't do it, so we put it up for sale, and it's gonna sell at a tremendous discount. I mean, it's the best location in the entire valley. You're 40 feet from the IMAX box office. You know, so but
I almost bought a Menchie's over here.
Did you?
Yeah, and then I decided not to. And they've been popping up everywhere, so I don't think they're making the money they were.
For an actor...
And I wasn't going to run it. You know what I mean? And, the franchise guy was like, you got to run it. Like,
yeah.
Well, I'm not going to fucking run it.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to put my money into
it. It's not like... It's completely different than having a 9-to-5 job 5 days a week.
Right.
Or even a part-time job. When your survival... to get your investment back, much less make a profit, involves you being there 7 days a week, that's a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a problem when you're an actor.
Sure.
And, you know, I need to do this, I need to do that. Plus, it's too far. When we were down here in Studio City, we saw everybody a lot more. We were socializing. I was more part of the acting scene. And right now I'm juggling...
What's the stress of it? Gonna wear you down as an actor.
It's exactly right. It's exactly right. I mean, I'm fortunate. I mean, I'm always working. Mm. But you know, another part of it is that I don't. I mean, 20 years now. I think half the enjoyment for me is having my wife on the set with me.
Sure.
You know, so when I fly to New Orleans, and I've been there a couple of times, you know, G.I. Joe is in New Orleans for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. The third week, I told her, I said, no, you got to come down. I said, I don't like this. I just don't like it. To meet the people that I'm meeting, to be part of the experience for me, it's very important because, you know, without Peg, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, she's been my rock.
Right.
38 years. She's never said no. On the East Coast, when I first came out here, I crossed the California border end of October, 98. She didn't come out with me originally because mm-hmm. she still had a job back east and her father's health and mm-hmm. family issues. So we only saw each other once a year for 5 years.
Wow.
Family went nuts. My mother was crazy. What are you doing, yada yada? So I don't think I've ever met another woman ever in my life that would have said what my wife said. Go get the career off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just guest starred on Law and Order. And I didn't want to come out here without that because I knew what it would do. So
sure.
I was with the old Acme agency. They've
yeah, I was with them.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You were yeah. what, Rob Zamba?
No, I was with Gwen Pepper was there at the time.
Well, I was with Eileen Haves in New York.
Oh, okay.
They had it by call. It was by
no, Lisa Lieblay. It was
Lisa
had actually flown to New York and met me through a casting director, right. who said, "Just somebody you got to meet because you've done Law and Order. Now you got to go to L.A. At the time there was nothing else going on in New York. Now, you know." She said, "But there's somebody flying out. They're established on the Los Angeles." Lisa came out, met me, said, "Oh yeah, no, we're going to put me through my paces, like an hour in the room, mm-hmm. whatever." Scene I was. She had me do it 20 different ways, and she said, "Okay, you're come out to L.A. Your agent responsible for you is going to be Gwen Pepper, who was mm-hmm. terrific." So I signed out of New York office, signed into the L.A. office. Mm-hmm. Peg couldn't come, so I come out here. You know, at that age, and I'm renting a room in North Hollywood, in a condo. Mm-hmm. So it was rough, but Peg finally was able to square up everything and. 5 years, she came out in 03, and has been here ever since. But she'd come out for Christmas, you know, and I'd go back there maybe for, like, Easter, but that was about it, and it drove the family insane.
Well, I tell him, you know, I mean, he was married, and he's divorced, and now he's got a girlfriend now. But, you know, my wife, we met 2 weeks before 9/11, and she was flying in the air. They had to be landed into, like, Nova Scotia. And we had never went on a date. We had talked. We talked every day. And
right.
she went to Greece for a trip. And she was flying during 9/11. And when the bombings hit, she had to be emergency landed into Nova Scotia.
Oh, sure.
I thought, you know, she works right down by the World Trade Center. I'm freaking out. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I wonder what the deal. So I'm calling. I leave her messages. And then a few days later, when she could actually retrieve her messages, because the way it was in New York, you couldn't get through the phones or anything.
Sure.
And she's like, she told her girlfriend, she goes, man, she goes, this guy that I met, and we were talking, she's like, he called to see if I was okay, and she goes, this might be the guy, I don't, you know, whatever. And that was it, and I've been with her ever since. You know what I mean? And we've been through so much together. And she's my best friend. My mom and dad were married 54 years. And my dad, all of a sudden, I was shooting a movie. And I never had to tell anybody like this. And I go, my sister calls me and goes, are you coming home for Thanksgiving? I go, well, I never come home for Thanksgiving. She's like, dad is not dad. You need to come home. I come home, he's dead 2 days later. He dies in my arms, you know, lung cancer. He got lung cancer. I was like, Jesus Christ. You know, and my wife, I made a phone call to her 3 a.m. And I said, you know, they just said he's got the lung cancer, stage 4, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I guess I'll call you back. I don't know what the fuck to do. And then I call her like 2 hours later, and she's like, I booked a flight, I'm coming.
Yeah.
So she, boom. You know, it was like, so I was crying, you know what I mean? Amazing. He was always my my rock for my career. My mom, she kind of was, but as a stand-up comic, you know, I never wanted to be an actor. I had the look. That's what the agents pushed me. They were like, look, you're not just like, you have a look. You need to, you know, skinnier, better looking. And they were like, that was the thing. And then I met Tim in 96. We were doing stand-up, mm-hmm. and Tim had already kind of been acting a little bit. And then that was it. And I booked fucking, you know, 30 commercials and all that. And then we came out. We got married in 2003, about October. And my manager flew me out here to do a showcase at Acme, this Acme Theater.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And I did two acting scenes, and I did stand-up. And then they had, like, Will Morris and Buckwald and all this stuff. And all these agents wanted to rep me, and I called her. And I go, and we were going to buy a condo in Brooklyn.
Right.
And I go, I think we might have to move to L.A. And she's like, all right. You know, like,
yeah,
like
sure,
back,
yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's it. So I just, you know, and then me and Tim, you know, and Tim's like, man, he's like, you know, when I was going to marry her, he's like, he goes, she's the one. I go, she's the one, man.
Yeah.
She's the one. That's it. You know?
Yeah, no, it's hard to describe.
I'd hate to be out here without somebody.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, you know, my buddies, they get upset. They're out there drinking, and they do especially coke. I never did drugs in my whole life.
Yeah,
these guys
do coke. And,
you know, especially nothing. In the beginning, I see it so much. And, you know, it was with me, too, is the guys who come out, and they expect to hit a home run right away. They hear stories, and then in reality, they get hit hard. And
you know, I tell you, that's actually... I don't know how anybody else feels about this. That's actually pissed me off quite a bit.
Yeah.
The actors that come out for pilot season and then they go back home.
You know my what? Wife gets really pissed at that. She's like, how are they getting all the auditions? I go, look, they're not going to fucking sustain.
Right, but it's not only that, Jimmy. The fact that they come out here, you, me, mm-hmm. Tim, we uprooted our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We left family, friends, mm-hmm. 2,800 miles away. To establish new roots permanently.
Mm-hmm.
Before I came out, it seemed like everybody that I knew that was coming out here, there was almost like a standard phrase. How long are you going out for? I'm going to give it like 3 years, maybe 5 years. I heard anywhere between 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood that. I was like, it doesn't make any sense. So when my turn finally came and I was ready, I went Law and Order. Went back down to South Florida for 2 months R&R before I came out here, and at that point, all my friends knew that I was moving. Or you know, Rob, how long are you going out for? I said, I'm not coming back. Yeah. What do you mean you're not coming back? I'm not coming back. I'm going to do this or I'll die.
Yeah.
This is what I was meant to do. I even went to St. Thomas More Parish and talked to Father Colbert about it in the beginning. I was like, is this a worthwhile endeavor? I mean, or am mm-hmm. I just putting? He was right on about it.
I just got new headshots, of course. That's why I'm out here. No, I feel like the priest. They got their headshots. They give you a card.
I've known a lot of a lot of priests in my life.
Yeah.
And the ones I've gotten along with were the ones that would, you know, come up and, you know, there's a certain amount of piety in public. But they'll come up and they'll smack you in the back of the head and say, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
They're regular guys. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know what? He said, first of all, I think it was Pope John Paul. He said, you know, he was an actor. I said, really? I didn't know that. He said, yeah. Matter of fact, he played Petruchio in Taming of the Shrew, which was the first gig I booked ever. I played the lead. Yeah, amazing. I didn't know it either. He says, and this solidified it for me, you know, because I've been Roman Catholic. I'm a devout Catholic until the day I die. That's the way it is.
Sure.
And he says, if whatever it is you do, if you're good enough, in whatever medium, you know, you stage, whatever. He says, if you can do something on a stage or in front of a camera that'll let somebody else forget their problems for an hour or two, he said, it is definitely worthwhile. Do it. And that solidified it for me. I walked out and I went back to Peg and I said, yeah, you know what? That makes sense. If I can, this isn't just like, oh, he's an actor. He's mm-hmm. not, you know, I'm not a neurosurgeon. I'm not working on cancer research. He's mm-hmm. He's an actor. I said, but that makes sense. I said, that's why we all go to the movies. That's why we watch anything. We want to escape for a little while. That's why we watch a comedian. We want to laugh. Mm-hmm. And if it can make somebody, so that solidified it for me. But they were all saying, again, it was still, what do you mean you're not coming back? Yeah. I'm not coming back. I'm establishing roots. I'm taking a shot. How can you give yourself a time? For me, that's like saying, oh, you have a newborn baby. How long are you going to give him to walk?
Yeah.
As long as it takes.
Yeah. Like, he just came out 2 years ago, and I kind of, you know, he was going through a divorce and possibly, and she's like, or whatever, they wanted a separation, and then he's like, well, I'm going to go live with Jimmy. And she's like, I thought you were just going to go to, you know, Brooklyn. Like, from Queens. Like,
right.
She goes, you went to L.A., you asshole. Like, she's so mad. He goes, well, that's it. He goes, I should have came out here years ago. He goes, I stayed with you in New York. I should have came out here. Because she didn't know how to drive. She didn't know how to deal with anything. Tim knew how to drive.
And, you know, they,
you know? So that's it. He's out here now.
When you moved, like, there's people that are happy. Hey, good luck. You know, keep in touch. And there's people that, like, what are you, like, they question it. What are you,
that's exactly, you're right.
LA is full of this.
Exactly.
I was there once, and.
Yeah, you got these. As I always said, you know, you have your great actors in New York, but I always believe that it's like, New York is college. This is the pros. This is the NBA. Like,
but not only that, but the actors that we know as New York actors, they had to come to L.A. too.
Sure.
Doesn't De Niro still have a point? Maybe he does at the Chateau Marmont.
Yeah.
He's had a room there for you know, they had to come to L.A. first. Yeah, they
like Montaigne. He told me he came from. He learned everything. He goes, I learned everything in New York, the theater, and I came here and I put it all to work here.
Yeah.
He goes, that's I learned it all the theater. In New York.
Did you know that Montaigne and Dennis Franz came out at the same time? They were best friends.
Were they roommates or anything?
I think they were either roommates, or but they literally traveled out here together.
Yeah,
it was very cool. We're good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So this was fun.
Yeah, I got just a couple quick things. Yeah. Is there anything you want to plug? You got your big film coming up. We can't talk about it.
Yeah, I can't say anything about that yet.
Your Facebook is. Anything? Do you have a fan page? Do
you
have
Twitter? Yeah. Facebook. I'm starting to get into more and more of that, and I realize that, you know.
Are your agents pushing that at all? You're gonna have a Twitter phone.
No, I'm looking for new representation, manager, and agent right now. Okay. My Dallas agent, my agent down south, got me a guest star audition here yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, for Better Call Saul. Oh, and I'm like. You got to be kidding! I said,
Better Call Saul, but they're shooting.
Shooting Albuquerque, yeah, but
they're doing the casting here.
Bialy Thomas cast it here. Sharon and Sherry cast it over here. That. Yeah, guest star in the unit. They brought me in the last time I saw them was Lie to Me.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, but I thought it was ironic. I said, Joey. Because he knows I'm without an agent right now. He says, I got you on an audition. I said, okay, what do I need to do? You know, where do I need to fly? He says, just run over to Bialy. How did you do that for me?
Yeah.
He says, I've worked with them before, he said, and they know you. So, yeah.
Right.
They said, oh, yeah. Send Bobby over. Yeah. So, now I'm searching for, I'm looking for new reps and all around. Because eight films, I think, this year since January, except for one, I got them all myself.
Right.
So, you know, I'm out there. I'm always hustling.
You're always hustling. You know, that's the thing.
Never give up. Just never give up.
So, is there anything? There are a couple things that I do ask people.
Yes, sir.
What would your, if you were a porn star, what would your porn star name be?
My porn star name. God, yeah, my wife just asked me that the other day. No, she didn't. my porn star name. Oh, back in New York, I don't know. I was Bobby Katz. Katrina, you know, they just cut it short to Katz. Other nickname when I was growing up was Doc.
Because
I always fix things. I always.
Oh, you're the fixer.
Yeah, I always.
Doc Fixer.
There you go, Doc Fixer.
So if you were, you know, we didn't talk too much about the actors that you worked with. We talked about directors. Who is your man crush? Who is I strive to be that actor?
For a long time, it's been Gary Oldman.
Oh, I got a great story about him. I'll tell you
Gary before
Oldman. He walk out the door, but yeah.
Yeah, it's, just watch what Gary does, and say, yeah. But, I mean, there's a little laundry list, too, of, you know, people that I've worked with that are just, you just sit back and say, wow.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell it. I've never told it on the air. So my wife, we're such New Yorkers. Yeah. We're a one-car family.
Right.
Right? I can buy another car, no big deal. Right? But she takes the bus. She likes to take the bus. She has a bus pass. She's a New Yorker. She goes right over there, boom. So she's on the bus, and this lady is fiddling with her stuff. And she's like, I doesn't have that. And my wife pays her fee or whatever for the bus. And my wife normally never is like that. She doesn't do that. You know, she just thinks lady's trying to scam her or whatever. But I don't know. She just felt like, boom, so she pays. And she said, oh, thank you so much. I could, you know, I pay. I couldn't find my money in my bus. She said, oh, no problem. My wife helps her on the bus. And all of a sudden, and she goes, oh, so you're right. And they're talking. They ride the bus. And she goes, and somehow my wife says, my husband's an actor, blah, blah, blah. She goes, oh, my son's an actor. And she's an older lady, you know, older lady.
Jeez.
And she goes, my son's an actor. And I was, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She goes, you're Gary Oldman. Have you ever heard of him?
Oh, Christ.
And my wife goes, he's one of my favorite actors. My husband's favorite actor. Like, so she's got pictures, selfies of him at the awards and everything.
Gary Oldman's mom's taking a bus.
She's taking the bus. Swear to God. Gary, get your mom a chauffeur.
Get her
an Uber, an all-time Uber.
Get her an Uber account.
But anyways,
get her a Lyft account.
True story. So my wife goes home, Googles it. She's like, look. She's like, this is the... And my wife has a picture with the mother, and they're on the bus. Oh, my God.
That's funny.
Isn't that a great story?
That is so funny.
So anyways, one thing before I go, I've had a great time with you on the Brooklyn Buddha podcast.
Yeah, this was fun.
Here's the thing. I like to know what your favorite swear word is.
Probably shit. If something goes wrong, for me, it's usually shit. Shit, followed by God damn it. Shit. God damn it.
God damn it. A devout Catholic just said that.
I know. A devout mass attending Catholic.
Anyways, Robert Catrini. A pleasure, hey,
Bob,
my friend.
Bob, please, Bob.
Bob.
Only my wife has to call me Mr. Kachuk. Like, shit, Peg's not going to hear that.
Thank you. We'll see you next time on the Brooklyn Buddha Podcast.
Thank you, guys. A lot of fun.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.